Hello and welcome to the Beyond podcast and another of our continuing crossover episodes with our YouTube channel, where our exploring work primarily now lives. This is a taster of our work, where we start with a slow read through, a first look, and then follow up with a number of fast-paced second looks, sometimes with a more of a performance element. This interlude, The Four Elements, was looked at 3 times, and this episode is the first of 2 episodes running the play at pace. We've skipped past the first look, slow look, and we're now into the middle of the second look process. And if you enjoy this, then do follow the links in the show notes to the video of our next session, where we tried to enact the text with more performance and visuals. And of course, if you want to do the journey, you can go back and there's a full playlist of all the videos that we did on the YouTube channel on this. In fact, if you're listening in the future, you'll be able to watch things that we haven't even done yet when I recorded this link. I'm sure there'll be more stuff in the future. It's a never-ending process. There's always more to come. Till then, I, future Robert Crichton, will pass you over to past Robert Crichton for this run of The Four Elements by John Rastall. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to this second look exploring session, looking at a new interlude and a merry of the nature of the four elements. Yes, this is not just a play from the press of John Rastall. It is actually a text by John Rastall. It's just lovely. Isn't that nice? He did quite a lot of theatre work. He even built his own theatre at Finsbury Fields and printed an awful lot of material as well, possibly material that he commissioned for performance at his own private little theatre. He was very important to our understanding of some early 16th century drama, because he was one of the great pioneer printers of texts. So we adore and worship the wonders that is John Rastall. Today is a second look. It's our first second look, as it were. They're split into 2 parts now. This is take one. We're going to go through this text at pace. We haven't done any rehearsal, any prep. This is effectively a sort of open rehearsal, test of ideas. We've already done a read through where we stopped and started. We did it almost a year ago, so it's all got a bit blurry. So this is to remind ourselves, but also to see how the text functions at pace. It is moderately compendious at times. There are lots of bits of material which is relatively straightforward for Zoom, and there's a lot of material that really, really isn't. And we may come careering into those things at too fast, and chaos may ensue. But that's all part of the fun. Reading today, Humanity. Humanity is in the room and is going to be read by...
I'm Greg, and I'm unashamedly quite fond of this text.
There's no need to be ashamed. We're all friends here. Reading The Personification of Nature and a Taverner today is...
Hi, I'm Alex Scott Fairley, and I wasn't here when you first read this, so I'm excited to see what happens. Will it be King Darius?
No, it will not be another King Darius. Only King Darius can ever King Darius, yes. Reading The Messenger, Experience, and also Personifying a Dancer is...
Lindsay Beecham, actor, currently in Norfolk.
And reading Ignorance today is...
Hi, I'm Eric. We don't need no education. I don't know if I was here. I don't think I was here. Was I here? Maybe I was. I don't know. Maybe, yeah. maybe in spirit.
In spirit, I'd say you were there.
I even knew you.
Before you even knew us by almost, by months, many, many months. Back in the dark times, we were doing this play. Reading Sensual Appetite today is...
Liza Graham, Faking It Till I Make It, London.
And reading Studious Desire is...
Rachel McCall, actor in New Jersey. My first time going into this text too.
And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. I will be reading nothing. What I'll be doing is tidying up any textual errors that we haven't already rooted out prior to when we return to this text. The plan is once we've done this run, we're going to give it a couple of weeks, do a little bit of thinking, a little bit of prep, and we're going to do it with cameras coming on and off, and it's going to be a much more coordinated thing unless we decide never to do it again. So let's take it back to around about 1518-ish, 1520s, somewhere around there. That's where we're going back to now. And I'll ask the messenger to start us off as we begin the new interlude and a merry of the nature of the four elements.
The abundant grace of the power divine, which doth illumine the world environ, preserve this audience and cause them to incline to charity. This is my petition. For by your patience and supportation, a little interlude, late made and prepared, before your presence here shall be declared, which of a few conclusions is contrived, and points of philosophy natural. But though the matter be not so well declared as a great clerk could do, nor so substantial, yet the author hereof requireth you all, though he be ignorant and can little skill, to regard his only intent and goodwill, which in his mind hath oft times pondered, what number of books in our tongue maternal, of toys and trifles be made and imprinted, and few of them of matter substantial. For though many make books, yet unneath ye shall in our English tongue find any works of cunning that is regarded by clerks. The Greeks, the Romans, with many other mo in their mother tongue, wrote works excellent. Then if clerks in this realm would take pain so, considering that our tongue is now sufficient to expound any hard sentence evident, they might, if they would, in our English tongue, write works of gravity sometime among. For divers pregnant wits be in this land, as well of noble men as of mean estate, which nothing but English can understand. Then, if cunning Latin books would translate into English, well correct and approbate, all subtle science in English might be learned, as well as other people in their own tongues did. But now so it is, that in our English tongue many one there is that can but read and write, for his pleasure will oft presume among new books to compile and ballads to indite, some of love or other matter not worth a mite, some to obtain favour will flatter and gloze, some to write curious terms, nothing to purpose. Thus every man after his fantasy will write his conceit, be it never so rude, be it virtuous, vicious, wisdom or folly. Wherefore to my purpose, thus I conclude, why should not then the author of this interlude utter his own fantasy and conceit also, as well as divers others nowadays do? For wisdom and folly is as it is taken, for that the one calleth wisdom, another calleth folly. Yet among most folk that man is holden most wise, which to be rich studieth only. But he that for a commonwealth busily studieth and laboureth and liveth by God's law, except he wax rich, men count him but a door. So he that is rich is ever honoured, although he have got it never so falsely. The poor, being never so wise, is reproved. This is the opinion most commonly throughout the world, and yet no reason why. Therefore, in my mind, when that all such doors have babbled what they can, no force of two straws, for every man in reason thus ought to do, to labour for his own necessary living, and then for the wealth of his neighbour also. But what devilish mind have they which, musing and labouring all their lives, do no other thing but bring riches to their own possession, nothing regarding their neighbour's destruction, yet all the riches in the world, that is, riseth of the ground by God's sending and by the labor of poor men's hands. And though thou, rich man, have thereof the keeping, yet is not this riches of thy getting, nor oughtest not in reason to be praised the more, for by other men's labor it is got before. A great-witted man may soon be enriched, that laboureth and studieth for riches only. But how shall his conscience then be discharged? For all clerks affirm that that man precisely which studieth for his own wealth principally, of God shall deserve but little reward, except he the commonwealth somewhat regard. So they say that that man occupied is for a commonwealth, which is ever labouring to relieve poor people with temporal goods, and that it is a common good act to bring people from vice and to use good living. Likewise, for a commonwealth occupied is he that bringeth them to knowledge that ignorant be. But man to know God is a difficulty, except by a mean he himself inure, which is to know God's creatures that be, as first them that be of the grossest nature, and then to know them that be more pure, and so by little and little ascending, to know God's creatures and marvelous working. And this wise man at the last shall come to the knowledge of God and his high majesty, and so to learn to do his duty, and also to deserve of his goodness partner to be. Wherefore in this work declared shall ye see, first of the elements the situation, and of their effects the cause and generation. And though some men think this matter too high, and not meet for an audience unlearned, methink for man nothing more necessary than this to know, though it be not used, nor a matter more low cannot be argued. For though the elements God's creatures be, yet they be most gross and lowest in degree. How dare men presume to be called clerks, disputing of high creatures celestial as things invisible and God's high works, and know not these visible things inferior? So they would know high things and know nothing at all. Of the earth here whereon they daily be, neither the nature, form, nor quantity. Wherefore it seemeth nothing convenient a man to study and his time to bestow, first for the knowledge of high things excellent, and of light matters beneath nothing to know, as of these four elements here below, whose effects daily appear here at eye. Such things to know first were most meet study, which matter before your presence shortly in this interlude here shall be declared, without great eloquence in rhyme rudely, because the compiler is but small learned. This work with rhetoric is not adorned, for perhaps in this matter much eloquence should make it tedious or hurt the sentence. But because some folk be little disposed to sadness, but more to mirth and sport, this philosophical work is mixed with merry conceits to give men comfort and occasion to cause them to resort to hear this matter, whereto, if they take heed, some learning to them thereof may proceed. But they that now this matter declare openly here unto this audience, behold, I pray you, see where they are. The players begin to appear in presence. I see well it is time for me to go hence, and so I will do. Therefore now shortly to God I commit all this whole company.
The high, mighty, most excellent of all, the fountain of goodness, virtue, and cunning, which is eterne of power most potential, the perfection and first cause of everything, I mean that only high nature naturing. Lo, he by his goodness hath ordained and created me here his minister, called nature naturate. Wherefore, I am the very naturate nature. the immediate minister for the preservation of everything in his kind to endure, and cause of generation and corruption, of that thing that is brought to destruction. Another thing still I bring forth again, thus wondrously I work, and never in vain. The great world behold, lo, divided wondrously into two regions, whereof one I call the ethereal region, with the heavens high, containing the planets, stars, and spheres all. The lower region called the elemental, containing these four elements below, the fire, the air, the water, and earth also. But yet the elements and other bodies all beneath take their effects and operations of the bodies in the region ethereal. By their influence and constellations, they cause here corruptions and generations. For if the movings above should once cease, beneath should be neither increase nor decrease. These elements of themselves so single be, unto diverse forms cannot be divided. Yet they commix together daily, you see, whereof diverse kinds of things be engendered, which things, at stones, when they be corrupted, each element I reduce to his first estate, so that nothing can be utterly annihilate. For though the form and fashion of anything that is a corporal body be destroyed, yet every matter remaineth in his being, whereof it was first made and formed. For corruption of a body commixed is but the resolution by time and space of every element to his own place. For who that will take any body corporal and do what he can it to destroy, to break it or grind it into powder small, to wash, to drown, to brenn it or to dry, yet the air and fire thereof naturally to their own proper places will ascend, the water to the water, the earth to the earth tend. For if heat or moisture of anything certain by fire or by water be consumed, yet earth or ashes on earth will remain. So the elements can never be destroyed. For essentially there is now at this tide as much fire, air, water, earth as was ever before this time, neither more nor less. Wherefore thou, man, now I speak to thee, remember that thou art compound and create of these elements as other creatures be. Yet they have not all like noble estate, for plants and herbs grow and be insensate. Brute beasts have memory and their wits five, but thou hast all those and soul intellective. So, by reason of thine understanding, thou hast dominion of other beasts all, and naturally thou shouldst desire cunning to know strange effects and causes natural. For he that studieth for the life bestial as voluptuous pleasure and bodily rest, I count him never better than a beast.
Oh, excellent prince and great Lord Nature, I am thine own child and formed instrument. I beseech thy grace, take me to thy cure and teach me such science thou thinkest expedient.
Then sith thou art so humble and benevolent, that thing that is meet for thy capacity and good for thy knowledge, I shall instruct thee. First of all, thou must consider and see these elements, which do each other penetrate, and by continual alteration they be of themselves daily corrupted and generate. The earth, as a point or centre, is situate in the midst of the world, with the water joined, with the air and fire round and whole environed. The earth of itself is ponderous and heavy, cold and dry of his own nature proper. Some part lieth dry continually, and part thereof covered over with water, some with the salt sea, some with fresh river, which earth and the water together withal so joined make a round figure spherical. So the water, which is cold and moist, is found in and upon the earth, filling the hollowness in diverse parts, lying with the earth round. Yet the hills and mountains of the earth excess take nothing of it away the roundness, in comparison, because they be so small, no more than the pricks do that be on a gall. The air, which is hot and moist also, and the fire, which is ever hot and dry, about the earth and water jointly they go, and compass them everywhere orbicularly, as the white about the yolk of an egg doth lie. But the air in the lower part most remaineth, The fire naturally to the higher tendeth, the ethereal region which containeth the stars and planets and every sphere about the elements daily moveth and covereth them round about everywhere. Every star and sphere in strange manner upon his own poles moveth diversely, which now to declare were too long to tarry. The fire and the air of their natures be light, therefore they move by natural providence the water, because it is ponderous in weight, moveth not naturally, but by violence of the stars and planets, by whose influence the sea is compelled to ebb and flow daily, and fresh waters to spring continually. And though that the water be gross and heavy, yet nothing so gross as the earth, I wis, therefore by heat it is vapoured up lightly, and in the air maketh clouds and mists. But as soon as ever that it grossly is gathered together, it descendeth again, and causeth upon the earth hail, snow, and rain. The earth, because of his ponderosity, avoideth equally the movings great of all extremities and spheres that be, and tendeth to the place that is most quiet. So, in the midst of all the spheres is set, foremost object from all manner moving, where naturally he resteth and moveth nothing. Mark well now, how I have thee showed and told of every element, the very situation and quality, wherefore this figure behold for a more manifest demonstration. And because thou shouldst not put to oblivion my doctrine, this man, called Studious Desire, with thee shall have continual habitation, thee still to exhort more science to acquire. For the more that thou desirest to know anything, therein thou seemest the more a man to be. For that man that desireth no manner cunning, all that while no better than a beast is he. Why being the eyes made, but only to see, the legs to bear the body of a creature? So everything is made to do his nature. So likewise, reason, wit, and understanding is given to thee, man, for that thou shouldst indeed know thy maker and cause of thine own being, and what the world is, and whereof thou dost proceed. Wherefore it behoveth thee of very need the cause of things first to learn, and then to know and lord the high God eternal.
O glorious Lord and Prince most pleasant, greatly am I now beholden unto thee, so to illumine my mind that was ignorant with such noble doctrine as thou hast here shown me, whereof I promise upon my fidelity, my diligence to keep in memory, and thee for to honour still perpetually.
And sith it hath pleased thy grace to admit me upon this man to give attendance, with thy doctrine here shown I shall quicken his wit and daily put him in remembrance. His courage and desire I shall also enhance, so that his felicity shall be most of all, to study and to search for causes natural.
Well then, for a season I will depart, leaving you together here both twain. What I have shown, man, print well in thine heart, and mark well this figure that here shall remain, whereby thou mayest perceive many things more plain concerning the matter I spoke of before, and when that I shall resort here again, of high points of cunning I shall show thee more.
Now, humanity, call to your memory the cunning points that nature hath declared. And though he has shown diverse points and many of the elements so wondrously formed, yet many other causes there are would be learned. As to know the generation of things all here in the earth, how they be engendered as herbs, plants, wellsprings, stone, and metal.
Those things to know for me be full expedient, but yet in those points which nature late showed me, my mind in them as yet is not content, for I can no manner wise perceive, nor see, nor prove by reason why the earth should be in the middle of the firmament, hanging so small, and the earth with the water to be round withal.
Methinketh myself, as to some of those points, I could give a sufficient solution. For first of all, thou must needs grant this, that the earth is so deep and bottom hath none, or else there is some gross thing it standeth upon, or else that it hangeth, thou must needs consent, even in the midst of the firmament.
What then? Go forth with thine argument.
Then mark well, in the day or in a winter's night, the sun and moon and stars celestial, in the east first they do appear to thy sight, and after in the west they do downfall, and again in the morrow next of all. Within 24 hours they become just to the east point again, where thou sawst them first. Then if the earth should be of endless deepness, or should stand upon any other gross thing, it should be an impediment, doubtless, to the sun, moon, and stars and in their moving. Therefore, in reason, it seemeth most convenient the earth to hang in the midst of the firmament.
Thine argument in that point doth me confound that thou hast made, but yet it proveth not right that the earth by reason should be round. For though the firmament with his stars bright compass about the earth each day and night, yet the earth may be plain peradventure, quadrant, triangle, or some other figure.
That it cannot be plain, I shall well prove thee, because the stars that arise in the Orient appear more sooner to them that there be than to the other dwelling in the Occident. The eclipse is thereof a plain experiment of the sun or moon, which, when it doth fall, is never one time of the day in places all. Yet the eclipse generally is alway in the whole world as one time being. But when we that dwell here see it in the midday, they in the west part see it in the morning, and they in the east behold it in the evening. And why that should so be, no cause can be found, but only by reason that the earth is round.
That proveth the earth. Sorry, that reason proveth the earth that the least one ways to be round, I cannot gainsay, as for to account from the east to the west. But yet, notwithstanding all that, it may lease his roundness by some other way.
Nay, no doubt it is round everywhere, which I could prove thou shouldst not say nay, if I had thereto any time and leisure. But I know a man called Experience, of diverse instruments is never without, could prove all these points, and yet by his science can tell how many mile the earth is about. And many other strange conclusions his instruments could show thee so certain, that every rude charter should them perceive plain.
Now would to God I had that man now here for the contemplation of my mind.
If you will, I shall for him inquire and bring him hither, if I can him find.
Then might I say ye were to me right kind.
I shall essay, by God that me dear brought, for cunning is the thing that would be sought.
Well hit, quoth Hickman, when that he smote his wife on the buttocks with a beer pot. Aha! Now good even, fool, good even. It is even thee, knave, that I mean. Hast thou done thy babbling?
Yea, peradventure, what then?
Then hold down thy head like a pretty man, and take my blessing. Benedicite, I grant to thee this pardon, and give thee absolution for thy soothsaws. Stand up, jackdaw! I beshrew thy father's son! Make room, sirs, and let us be merry, with huffa gallant sing turn on the berry, and let the wide world wind sing frisky jolly with a hey trolly lolly, for I see well it is but folly to have a sad mind. For rather than I would use such folly to pray, to study, or be Pope holy, I'd as lief be dead. By God's body, I tell you true, I speak as I think now, else I beshrew even my next fellow's head. Master humanity, sir, by your leave, I were right loath you to grieve, though I do him despise. For if you knew him as well as I, you would not use his company, nor love him in no wise.
Sir, he looketh like an honest man, therefore I marvel that he can this wise him deprave.
Though he look never so well, I promise you, he hath a shrewd smell.
Why so? I pray you tell.
For he savoureth like a knave.
Hold your peace, sir. Ye mistake me. But I trow that ye would make me like to one of your kin.
Hark, sirs, hear ye not how boldly he calleth me knave again by policy. The devil pull off his skin. I would he were hanged by the throat, for by the mass I love him not. We two can never agree. I am content, sir, with you to tarry, and I am for you so necessary, you cannot live without me.
Why, sir, I say, what man be ye?
I am called Sensual Appetite. All creatures in me delight. I comfort the wits five, the tasting, smelling, and hearing. I refresh the sight and feeling to all creatures alive. For when the body waxeth hungry for a lack of food or else thirsty, then with drinks pleasant I restore him out of pain, and oft refresh nature again with delicate viand. With pleasant sound of harmony the hearing alway I satisfy, I dare this well report. The smelling with a sweet odor, and the sight with pleasant figure and colors I comfort. The feeling that is so pleasant of every member, a foot or hand, what pleasure therein can be by the touching of soft and hard, of hot or cold, not in regard except it come by me.
Then I cannot see the contrary, but ye are for me full necessary and right convenient.
Yea, sir, beware yet what ye do, for if you forsake my company so, Lord Nature will not be content. Of him ye shall never learn good thing, neither virtue nor no other cunning, this dare I well say.
Marry, avaunt, knave, I thee defy. Did nature forbid him my company? What sayest thou thereto? Speak openly.
As for that, I know well may.
No, by God, I'm right sure. For he knoweth well no creature without me can live one day.
Sir, I pray you be content. It is not utterly mine intent your company to exile, but only to have communication and a pastime of recreation with this man for a while.
Well, for your pleasure, I will depart.
Now, go, nay, go. I beshrew thy heart, the devil send thee forward.
Now, by my troth, I marvel greatly that ever ye would use the company so much of such a knave. For if ye do none other thing but to ever study and be musing, as he would have you, it will you bring at the last unto your grave. You should ever study principle for to comfort your life natural, with meats and drinks delicate, and other pastimes and pleasures among, dancing, laughing, and pleasant song. This is meat for your estate.
Because ye say so, I you promise that I have mused and studied such wise, methinketh my wits weary, my nature desireth some refreshing, and also I have been so long fasting that I am somewhat hungry.
Well then, will ye go with me to a tavern where ye shall see good pastimes, and at your liberty have whatsoever ye will?
I am content. Oh, so for to do with that, ye will not throw me go, but keep me company still.
Company, quoth I. Then that I shall, point device. And also do you true and good service. And thereto I plight my troth. And if ever that I forsake you, I pray to God the devil take you.
Marry, I thank you for that oath.
A mischief on it. My tongue, low, will trip sometime whatsoever I do. But you wot that I mean well.
Oh, yea, no force. Let this matter pass, but sensed even now that thou knowest where was a good tavern to make solace. Where is that? I pray thee tell.
Marry at the door, even hereby. If we call anything on high, the taverner will answer.
Oh, I pray thee, then call for him now.
Marry, I will. How, taverner, how? Why dost thou not appear?
Who is that calleth so hastily? A shrew, thine heart, speak softly. I tell thee I am not here.
Then I beshrew thee, page of thine age. Come hither, knave, for thy advantage. Why makest thou it so toe?
For mine advantage, marry, then I come. Beware, sirs, ho, let me have room. Lo, here I am. What sayest thou?
Marry thus. Here is a gentleman, I say, that neither ate nor drank this day. Therefore tell me, I thee pray, if thou have any good wine.
Oh, ye shall have Spanish wine and Gascon, rose colour, white claret, rampion, tire, capricorn, malvoisin, sack, raspy, alicant, rumney, Greek, hippocras, new made clary, such as ye never had. For if ye drink a draught or two, it will make you, ere ye thence go, by Gog's body, stark mad.
Ha, I wot thou art not without good wine, but here's a gentleman list to dine. Canst get him any good meat?
What meat, master, would you have?
I care not, so God me safe, save that it be wholesome to eat. I would we had a good stewed capon.
As for capons, ye can get none. The king's taker took up each one. I wot well there's none to get.
Well, though all the capons be gone, what then? Yeah, I can get you a stewed hen that is ready dight.
Oh, if she be fat, it will do well.
Fat or lean, I cannot tell. But as for this, I wot well, she lay at the stews all night.
Ooh, thou art a mad guest by this light.
Yea, sir, it is a fellow that never fails. But canst get my master a dish of quails? Small birds, swallows or wagtails, they be light of digestion.
Light of digestion? For what reason?
For physic putteth this reason thereto, because those birds fly to and fro, and be continual moving.
Then know I a lighter meat than that.
I pray thee tell me what?
If you will need to know it short and long, it is even a woman's tongue, for that is ever stirring.
Oh, sir, I pray thee let such fantasies be, and come hither near, and hark to me, and do after my bidding. Go purvey us a dinner, even of the most of all manner of dishes, both sod and roast, that thou canst get. Spare for no cost. If thou make three course.
Then you get neither goose nor swan, but a dish of dregs, a dish of bran, a dish of draff, and I trow then you cannot get three worse.
But what horse, and wouldst thou purvey bran, draff, and stinking dregs? I say, I hold thee mad, I trow.
Dog's passion. Said ye not thus that I should purvey you three coarse dishes? And these be coarse enough.
Three coarse dishes, quoth thou. What mad fool, thou mistakest me clean. I see well that what's not what I mean, and understandest amiss. I mean this wise. I would have thee to purvey meat so great plenty that thou shouldst of necessity serve them at three courses. That is to understand at one word thou shouldst bring them onto the board at three several times.
Oh, what then? I see well you will make a feast.
Oh, yea, by the rood, even with the greatest.
By my troth, then do your best, even after my mind. But ye must have more company.
Oh, that is true, and I would, and so would I gladly if I knew any to find.
Why, will ye follow my counsel?
Yay.
Then we will have little Nell, a proper wench, she dances well, and Jane with the black lace. We will have Bouncing Bess also, and two or three proper wenches. Right,
now be it so, thou art son's peer.
Then I perceive you will make good cheer.
Why? What else should I do?
If you think so best, then will I go before and make all things ready? Again, ye come there too.
Marry, I pray thee do so.
Then farewell, sirs, for I am gone.
We shall follow thee anon without any tarrying.
Then it is best, sir, ye make haste, for you shall spend here but time in waste and do no nother thing.
If ye will, let us go by and by.
I pray you be it, for I am ready, no man better willing.
Now, cousin Experience, as I may say, you are right welcome to this country, without any feigning.
Sir, I thank you thereof heartily, and I am as glad of your company as any man living.
Sir, I understand that ye have been in many a strange country, and have had great facility, strange causes to seek and find.
Right far, sir, I have ridden and gone and seen strange things many one, in Africa, Europe, and India. Both east and west I have been far, north also, and seen the South Star, both by sea and land, and been in sundry nations, with people of diverse conditions, marvellous to understand.
Sir, if a man have such courage or devotion in pilgrimage, Jerusalem unto, for to account the next way, how many miles is it, I you pray, from hence thither to go?
Sir, as for all such questions of towns, to know the situation, how far they be asunder, and other points of cosmography, you shall never learn them more surely than by that figure yonder. For who that figure did first devise, it seemeth well he was wise and perfect in this science. Both the sea and land also lie true and just as they should do, I know by experience.
Who think you brought here this figure?
I wot not.
Certes, Lord Nature himself not long agone, which was here personally declaring high philosophy and laughed this figure purposely for humanity's instruction.
Doubtless, right nobly done.
Sir, this realm you know is called England, sometimes Britain, I understand. Therefore, I pray you, point with your hand in what place it should lie.
Sir, this is England lying here, and that is Scotland that joineth him near, compassed about everywhere with the ocean sea around. And next from them westwardly, here by himself alone doth lie Ireland, that wholesome ground. Here then is the narrow sea to Calais and Boulogne the next way, and Flanders in this part. Here lieth France next him joining, and Spain southward from them standing, and Portugal in this quarter. This country is called Italy. Behold where Rome in the midst doth lie, and Naples here beyond. And this little sea that here is called the Gulf of Venice, and here Venice doth stand. As for Alman lieth this way, here lieth Denmark and Norway, and northward on this side there lieth Iceland, where men do fish. But beyond that, so cold it is, no man may there abide. This sea is called the Great Ocean. So great it is that never man could tell it since the world began, till now within this 20 years. Westward be found new lands that we never heard tell of before this, by writing nor other means. Yet many now have been there. And that country is so large of room, much longer than all Christendom, without fable or guile. For divers mariners had it tried, and sailed straight by the coastside above 5,000 mile. But what commodities be within, no man can tell nor well imagine. But yet, not long ago, some men of this country went, by the king's noble consent, it for to search to that intent, and could not be brought thereto. But they that were the adventurers have cause to curse their mariners, false of promise and dissemblers that falsely them betrayed, which would take no pains to sail farther than their own list and pleasure. Wherefore that voyage and divers other such caitiffs have destroyed. Oh, what a thing had be then if that they that be Englishmen might have been the first of all, that there should have take possession and made first building and habitation a memory perpetual. And also what an honourable thing, both to the realm and to the king, to have had his dominion extending there into so far a ground, which the noble king of late memory, the most wise prince, the seventh Harry, caused first for to be found. And what a great meritorious deed it were to have the people instructed to live more virtuously, and to learn to know of men the manner, and also to know God their maker, which as yet live all beastly, for they neither know God nor the devil, nor never heard tell of heaven nor hell, writing nor other scripture. But yet in the stead of God Almighty, they honour the sun for his great light, for that doth them great pleasure. Building nor house, they have none at all, but woods, cots, and caves small. No marvel, though it be so, for they use no manner of iron, neither in tool nor other weapon, that should help them thereto. Copper they have, which is found in divers places above the ground, yet they dig not therefore. But as I said, they have none iron, whereby they should in the earth mine to search for any ore. Great abundance of woods there be, most part fir and pineapple tree. Great riches might come thereby, both pitch and tar and soap ashes, as they make in the east lands, by brenning thereof only. Fish they have so great plenty that in havens take and slain they be, with staves without em fail. Now Frenchmen and other have found the trade, that yearly a fish there they laid above 100 sail. But in the south part of that country, the people there go naked alway. The land is of so great heat, and in the north part, all the clothes that they wear is but beast skin. They have no nother feet. But how the people first began in that country, or whence they came for clerks, it is a question. Other things more I have in store that I could tell thereof, but now no more till another season.
Then, at your pleasure, show some other thing. It liketh me so well your communing, ye cannot talk amiss.
Well, then will I turn again to my matter of cosmography, where I was heir. Behold, take heed to this. Lo, eastward, beyond the great ocean, here entereth the sea called Mediterranean, of 2,000 miles of length. The Sultan's country lieth hereby. The great Turk on the north side doth lie, a man of marvellous strength. This said north part is called Europa, and this south part called Africa. This east part is called India. But this new land's found lately been called America, because only Americas did first them find. Lo, Jerusalem lieth in this country, and this beyond is the Red Sea that Moses maketh of mention. This quarter is India Minor, and this quarter India Major, the land of Prester John. But northward this way, as ye see, many other strange regions there be, that people, and people that we not know. But eastward on the seaside, a prince there is that ruleth wide, called the Khan of Katao. And this is called the Great East Sea, which goeth all along this way toward the new lands again. But whether that sea go thither directly, or if any wilderness between them do lie, no man knoweth for certain. These new lands, by all cosmography, from the Khan of Katao's land cannot lie little past 1,000 miles. But from those new lands men may sail plain eastward and come to England again, where we began erewhile. Lo, all this part of the earth, which I have here described openly, the north part we do it call. But the south part on the other side is as large as this full and as wide, which we know nothing at all. nor whether the most part be land or sea, nor whether the people that there be bestial or cunning, nor whether they know God or no, nor how they believe, nor what they do, of this we know nothing. Lo, is not this a thing wonderful? How that...
Please, sir, no more of this matter. Behold where humanity cometh here.
How say you, Master Humanity? I pray you, have you not been merry and had good recreation?
Yea, I thank thee thereof every deal, for we have fared marvellously well. Drink, oh, and had good communication.
What? How, Master? Where be ye now?
What? I shrew thee. What haste hast thou that thou speak'st so high?
So high, quotha? I trow you be mad by St. Giles. For did ye not erewhile make pointment openly to come again all to supper, there as ye were today at dinner, and yet ye pointed not plain what meat that ye will have dressed, nor what delicacies ye'll have best. Methink you far over sane.
As for mine own part, I care not. Dress what meat thou lovest. Spare not whatever soever thou dost best think.
Now, if you put it to my liberty, of all meats in the world that be, by this light I love best drink.
It seemeth by thy face so to do. But my master will have meat also, whatsoever it cost.
Well, by God, sir, then you must tell me what.
Thy discretion, I force not whether it be sodden or roast.
Well, sir, then care not. Let me alone. You shall see that all things shall be done and ordained well and fine.
So I require thee heartily, and in any wise specially let us have a cup of new wine.
Ye shall have wine as new as can be, for I may tell you in privity it was brewed but yesternight.
But that is nothing for my delight.
Oh, but then I have for your appetite a cup of wine of old claret. There is no better by this light.
Well, I trust thee well enough.
No, but one thing, if it please you now. You see well, I take much pain for you. I trust you will see to me.
Yeah. I promise thee, get thee hence, and in this matter do thy diligence, and I shall reward thee.
Oh, because thou lookest for a reward, one thing for thee I have prepared that here I shall thee give. Thou shalt have a knave's skin, for to put thy body therein for term of thy life.
Now, gramercy, my gentle brother, and therefore thou shalt have another for voiding of strife.
Now farewell, gentle John.
Then farewell, fool, for I am gone.
Ha! Abide, abide, turn again, hark what I say. Yet there is another thing would do well at our master's washing.
Thing is that, I thee pray.
Marry thus, canst thou tell us yet where is any rose water to get?
Yea, that I can well purvey, as good as ever you put to your nose. For there is a false wench called Rose distilleth a quart every day.
By God, I would a pint of that were poured even upon my pate, before all this presence.
Yet I had liever she and I were both together secretly in some corner in the spence, for by God, it is a pretty girl. It is a world to see her whirl, dancing in a round. Oh, Lord God, how she will trip, she will bounce it, she will whip, yes, clean above the ground.
Well, that... All such matters pass, I say. And get thee hence and go thy way about all this other matter.
Then I go straight. Lo, fare you well.
But look, remember thou every deal that I spake of full air.
Yes, I warrant you. Do not fear.
God's Lord. Seest not who is here now. Watch, duteous desire, what news with you?
Ye shall know, sir, ere I go.
What art thou here? I see well I, the more knaves, the worse company.
Thy lewd conditions thou dost still occupy, as thou art wont to do.
But I say, who is this here in presence?
Sir, this is the man called Experience that I spake of before.
Experience? Why, is this he? So ye are right welcome unto me, and shall be evermore.
Sir, I thank you thereof heartily, but I assure you faithfully, I have small courage here to tarry as long as this man is here.
Why, Horson, what ailest at me?
For thou hast ever so lewd a property, science to despise, and yet thou art he that naught canst nor naught wilt learn.
Marry, a thought, knave! I make God a vow, I think myself as cunning as thou. That shall I prove shortly. I shall put thee a question now. Come near. Let me see how well thou canst answer. How spellest thou this word, Tom Cooper, in true orthography?
Tom Cooper, quotha. A wise question, hardly.
Yea, I tell thee again, Tom Cooper, how spellest it? Lo, he hath forgotten, ye may see the first word of his ABC. Hark, fool, hark, I will teach thee. P-A-P-A-T-E-R, ter, do together, Tom Cooper. Is not this a sore matter? Lo, here you see him proved a fool. He had more need to go to school than come hither to clatter.
Certain, this is a solution meet for such a boy's question.
Sense your appetite. I pray thee, let pass all trifles and vanity. For a while it shall not long be, and depart I thee require. For I would talk a word or two with this man here ere he hence go, for to satisfy my desire.
My God's soul! Will ye so shortly break pointment with yonder company where you should come to supper? I trust you will not break promise so.
I care not greatly if I do. It is but a tavern matter.
Then I will go show them what you say.
Oh, spare not if thou wilt go thy way, for I will here tarry.
Then adieu for a while, I tell you plain. But I promise you, when I come again, I shall make yonder knaves twain to repent and be sorry.
Now, I am full glad that he is gone.
So am I, for good will he do none to no living man. But this is the man with whom ye shall, I trust, be well content withal, and glad of his coming. For he hath expound cunningly diverse points of cosmography, in few words and short clause.
So I understand he hath good science, and that he hath by plain experience learned many a strange cause.
Yea, sir, and I say for my part, he is the cunningest man in that art that ever I could find. For ask what question ye will do, how the earth is round, or other mo, he will satisfy your mind.
Why, what doubt have ye therein found? Think ye the earth should not be round, or else how suppose you?
One way it is round, I must consent. But for this man proved it evident, toward the east and occident, it must needs round be.
And likewise from the south to north.
That point to prove were some thank worth.
Yes, that I can well prove, for this ye know as well as I. Ye see the north star in the sky, mark well, ye shall aneth it spy that ever it doth remove. But this I assure you, if you go northward an hundredth mile or two, ye shall think it riseth. And how that it is near approached the point over the top of your head, which is called your zenith. Yet, if ye go the other way, southward 10 or 12 days' journey, ye shall then think anon it descended and come more nigh the circle parting the earth and sky, as ye look straight with your eye, which is called your horizon. But ye may go southward so far that at the last that same star will seem so far downright, clear underneath your horizon. That sight thereof can you have none. The earth will stop your sight. This proveth of necessity that the earth must needs round be. This conclusion doth it try.
Now that is the properest conclusion that ever I heard. For by reason, no man may it deny. But, sir, if that a man sail far upon the sea, will then that star do there as on the ground?
Yea, doubtless. Sail northward, rise it will. And sail southward, it falleth still. And that proveth the sea round.
So doth it in mine opinion. But know you any other conclusion to prove it round save that alone?
Yea, that I know right well, as thus. Mark well when the sea is clear, that no storm nor wave thereon doth appear. This mariners can tell. Then, if a fire be made on night upon the shore, that giveth great light, and a ship in the sea far, they in the top the fire shall see, and they on hatch nothing at all. Yet they on hatches be near. Also on the sea, where men be sailing far from land, they see nothing but the water and the sky. Yet when they draw the land more near, then the hilltops begin to appear. Still they near more high and high, as though they were still growing fast out of the sea, till at last, when they come the shore to, they see the hill, top, foot, and all, which thing so could not befall, but the sea lay round also.
Methinketh your argument somewhat hard.
Then ye shall have it more plainly declared, if ye have great desire, for here, lo, by mine instruments I can show the plain experiments.
Thereto I do require.
With all my heart it shall be done. But for the first conclusion, that I speak of the fire, be this the sea that is so round, and this the fire upon the ground, and this the ship that is here. You know well that a man's sight can never be but in a line right.
Just you say that is clear.
Mark well then. May not that man's eye...
But unfortunately at this point we lose several pages. And so there's some sort of fight goes on. We found out that the earth is indeed round. Humanity gets really bored and is going to go back to sensual appetite. Some fun occurs. It all goes a bit pear-shaped. And yeah, he's hiding, but he can be seen.
Yeah, with arguing here these their foolish souls, that is not worth three straws. I love not this horse and philosophers, nor this great cunning extremers that tell how far it is to the stars. I hate all manner cunning. I would you knew it. I'm ignorance. Lord, I am of greater puissance than the king of England or France. Yes, I am the greatest lord living. I have servants at my retinue that long to me, I assure you, here within England, with me ignorance dwell still, and term of life, continue will, above 500,000.
Gog's nails, I have paid some of my trow.
What, my man, what aileth thee so to blow?
For I was at a shrewd fray.
Hast thou slain any of them?
Yea, I have slain them every man, save those that ran away.
Why, is any of them skipped and gone?
Yea, by God's body, every one, all that ever were there.
Why, then they be not all slain?
No. But I have put some to pain. For one whoreson there was that turned again, and I straight cut off his ear.
Then thou hast made him a cut purse.
Yea, but I served another worse. I smote off his leg by the hard arse. As soon as I met him there.
By my troth, that was a mad deed. Thou should have smit off his head, and then you should have never troubled thee more.
Oh, by touch, then I had been but mad, for there was another man that had smit off his head before.
Then thou hast quit thee like a tall knight.
Yea, that I have, by this light. But say, can you tell me right where became my master?
What, he that you call humanity?
Yea.
I would never, except he be here in some corner.
Huh. God's body, and true ye say. For yonder, though, behold, you may see where the mad fool doth lie.
Now, my faith and truth, it were great even great alms to smite his head from his body.
Nay, God forbid you should do so, for He is but an innocent, low, in manner of a fool. For as soon as I speak to him again, I shall turn his mind clean and make him follow my school.
And bid him rise. Let us hear him speak.
Now rise up, Master Happy. Your tail toteth out behind. Fear not, man. Stand up by and by. I warrant you, rise up boldly. Here is none but is your friend.
I cry you mercy, master dear.
Why? What is cause thou hidest thee here?
For I was almost for fear even clean out of my mind.
Nay, it is the study you have had in this foolish philosophy that made you mad. And none other thing I wiss.
That is as true as the gospel. Therefore, I have great marvel that thou ever wilt follow the counsel of your two knaves.
Oh, sir, you know right well this, that when any man is in other men's company, he must needs follow the appetite of such things as they delight, same time among purdy.
But such knaves would always have thee to put all thy mind and felicity in this foolish cunning to study, which, if thou do, will make thee mad, and away to be pensive and sad, thou shalt never be merry.
Merry, quotha? No, I make God a vow. But I pray thee, master, hark one word now, and answer this thing. Whether thought you it were better cheer at the tavern where we were ere, or else to clatter with these knaves here of their foolish cunning?
Oh, nay, I cannot say the contrary, but that I had such merry a company at the tavern than in this place.
Then if we have any wit or brain, let us go to the tavern again and make some merry solace.
If he will do so, then doth he wildly.
Why by my troth, I care not greatly, for I am indifferent to all company, whether it be here or there.
Then I shall tell you what we will do. Master Ignorance, you and he also shall tarry both still here. And I will go fetch hither a company, that ye shall hear them sing as sweetly as they were angels clear. And yet I shall bring hither another sort of lusty bloods to make disport, that shall both dance and sing, and turn clean above the ground with friskers and with gambols round that all the hall shall ring. And that done, within an hour or twain, I shall at the town again prepare for you a banquet of meats that be most delicate, and pleasant drinks and wines thereat that is possible to get, which shall be in a chamber fair, prepared point device, with damask water made so well that all the house thereof shall smell as it were paradise. And after that, if ye will touch a fair wench naked in a couch on a bed of down, for to satisfy your wanton lust, I'll appoint you a troll of trust, not a fairer in this town. And when you have taken your delight and thus satisfied the appetite of your wits five, you may well say then, I am a servant for you, so necessary and pleasant, I trow none such alive.
Now by the way that God did walk, it comforteth mine heart to hear thee talk, thy match was never seen.
Then go thy way by and by, and bring in this company, that he and I will tarry till thou come again.
And I pray thee heartily also.
At your request, so shall I do. Lo, I am gone now. Farewell. I shall bring them into this hall, and come myself foremost of all, and of these revels be chief marshal, and order all things well.
Now, set thy heart on a merry pin, against these lusty bloods come in, and drive fantasies away.
And so I will, my heaven's king, if they either dance or sing, oh, have a morning by this day.
Then thou takest good and wise ways, and so shalt thou best please all this whole company, for the foolish arguing that thou hast had with that knave Experience, that had made all these folk thereof Weary. For all they that be now in this hall, they be the most part my servants, all, and love principally the sports as dancing, singing, toys, trifles, laughing, jesting. For cunning they said not by.
I see well such company. Evermore a sensual appetite is gone for will please well this audience.
Yea, that I suppose they will. But peace, hark. I pray thee be still. I ween they not be far hence.
Peace, sirs, peace now, peace, sirs, all.
Who is that so high doth call?
Silence, I say, be you among, for we be disposed to sing a song.
Come in, thou boldly, among this presence. For here you shall have
good audience.
Audience. Time to pass with goodly sport to our sprites to revive and comfort. To pipe, to sing, to dance, to spring with pleasures and delight, following sensual appetite.
I can you thank that is done well. It is pity you had not a minstrel to augment your souls.
As for minstrel, it maketh no force. Ye shall see me dance a course without a minstrel, be it better or worse. Follow all, I will lead a trace.
Now how among you by this light?
That is well said by God Almighty. Make room, sirs. Give them place.
Dance we.
Prance we. So merrily let us dance, I.
And I can dance it gingerly. And I can prank it properly. And I can countenance comely.
And I can croak it courteously.
And I can leap it lustily. And I can turn it trimly. And I can frisk it freshly. And I can look it lordly.
I can thee thank, sensual appetite. That is the best dance without a pipe that I saw this 7 year.
Oh, this dance would do much better yet if it had a pit or tabaret. Oh, but alas, there is none here.
Then let us go to the tavern again. Then shall we be sure of one or twain of minstrels that can well play.
Then go, sorry. I pray ye by and purvey some minstrel ready, and he and I will follow shortly, as fast ever we may.
Oh, therewith I am right well content.
Then will I go incontinent and prepare everything that is meetly to be done. And for lack of minstrels, the mean season, now will we begin to sing. Now will we here begin to sing, for dance we can no more. For minstrels here be all lacking to the tavern, we will therefore.
Oh, now if that sensual appetite can find any good minstrels after his mind, doubt not we shall have good sport.
And so we shall have, for a surety. But what shall we do now, tell me, meanwhile, for our comfort?
Then let us some lusty balancing.
Nay, sir, by the heaven king, for you think of the service for nothing, all of such peevish, prick-eared song.
Peace, man, prick song may not be despised, for therewith God is well pleased, honoured, praised, and served in the church oft times among.
Is God well pleased, trust thou thereby? Nay, for there is no reason why, for is it not as good to say plainly, give me a spade, as give me a spade. But if thou wilt have a song that is good, I have one Robin Hood, the best that ever was made.
Oh, then a fellowship, let us hear it!
But there is a burden that thou must bear it, or else it will not be.
Then begin and care not for me. Down, 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 down.
Well, Robin Hood in Barnsdale stood and left him till the maple thistle. Then came Our Lady and sweet St. Andrew. Sleepest thou, wakest thou, Geoffrey Coke? 100 winter the water was deep. I cannot tell you how broad. He took a gooseneck in his hand and over the water he went. He start up to a thistle top and cut him down a Holland club. He stroke the wren between the horns, that fire sprang out of the pig's tail. Jack boys, I bow I broke, or hath anyone done the wriggle de rag? He plucked mussels out of a willow and put them into his satchel. Wilkin was an archer good and well could handle a spade. He took his bent bow in his hand and set him down by the fire. He took with him 60 bows and 10, a piece of beef, a mount of bacon, another of bacon of all the birds in merry England. So merrily pipes the merry bottle.
Well, humanity, now I see plainly that thou hast used much folly the while I have been absent.
Excuse me. Sir, I trust I have done nothing that should be contrary to your pleasing, for never was mine intent. For I have followed the counsel clear, and ye, as ye may bade, of studious desire. And for your necessity, among some times since your appetite counsel, for without him, you know right well, my life cannot endure long.
Though it be for thee full necessary for thy comfort sometime to satisfy thy sensual appetite, yet it is not convenient for thee to put therein thy felicity and all thy whole delight. For if thou wilt learn no science, neither by study nor experience, I shall thee never advance. But in the world thou shalt dure then, despised of every wise man, like this rude beast, ignorance.
And there, sadly, that's all we've got. We've lost the remainder of the play, where presumably humanity is saved from himself and from ignorance. And it's interesting coming back at this nearly a year after having gone round the first time round. How many more other things that this is now, we're now able to say, oh, this is very similar. We've been here before, or we will be here in the future. Yeah, so it's yeah, all sorts of things leaping out at me. Lots of chaos there. Some things we might not try again. Things we might tweak. Some we've got some original music we can put in, and stuff that we might do. I've been tidying up the script, so some of the minor appellation of who's saying what at one point went a bit wrong. But otherwise, it's given us a good marker actually of the things that we need to the text makes difficult, as well as the stuff that the text makes very, very, very easy for us. I haven't said already in this video, we've said it before, the opening introduction to this play does actually mention that this play can be cut. The author themselves says that the bits, if you want to make the play shorter, you can cut some of nature, some of experience, and the messenger. If you cut those bits down, then the play's suddenly so much shorter. But our challenge is, of course, to make those compendious TED Talks into more engaging things. Some of them work really well, actually. I found the science, when it was some of the more purer science stuff, I thought was actually really engaging. The travelogue less so as text, because it's just, and this is here. And this is here. Whereas the stuff actually talking about the process of how things work are, you know, engaged in a way. I've been watching quite a few Royal Institution lectures of late, and I was trying to get in the zone. So it's very similar to that kind of thing. I've been talking a lot. I can say actually a lot more, but I won't. I'll go around the room and see thoughts from that dry run, getting back in our mind for those who've done it before, and getting into the mindset for those who haven't done it before. Thoughts from the room. Greg, were you horribly, horribly disappointed with the text after your original rose-tinted spectacles, or shall we say rose-water spectacles?
Yes, I'd forgotten the rose water bit.
Oh, it was the only thing I remembered.
To be honest, as soon as it started, I went, oh, cripes, yes, about that. Oh, anyway, slightly tainted from last year. I'd forgotten just how snoringly boring but some of it was. But I still think it's a really interesting playing with a lot of good, careful cutting. It could be a really interesting play.
As I say, the author agrees, so I feel we're allowed. Not for the next time, I'm afraid. There's no cutting there. You just have to do it. We just have to find ways of making it more engaging.
No, but I can turn off my camera for the next one.
Yes, you're not doing any of the really compendious speeches. I think we should go to Lindsay first, because you have one or two quite long bits. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I the messenger could definitely be cut. I mean, I think there was an interesting, I found it interesting, this idea about, you know, rich men think they're better when their money is just basically gotten off the work of their slaves kind of thing. I quite liked that particular point, but I mean, there's just endless paragraphs of it. I mean, not paragraphs, but just endless bits, and a lot of that could be cut. And I also found the travelogue bit a little bit, I didn't mind the sort of the proof of that the world is round sort of bit, but the, you know, and here is this bit and here is that bit, I thought also was very dull with experience. So, I feel like those could be cut, and we definitely need PowerPoint to come in at some point or something like that.
Oh, I think when we've got those, when it is it has content that is, you know, has angles that some visual stimuli which is in the text, in the sense that they come on with a globe and it is there, so again we're not adding. There's a really interesting thing, I don't think it's interesting for a performance, but I did find it very interesting, the very opening thing the messenger says about, you know, people don't have a very high opinion of English. And you know, he's a printer, so it's in his interests, Rastel, to promote the idea that English, we can write really good things in English. English can do exciting things.
We can write academic things in English and science in English and all of that. Yes,
yeah. You know, we praise other languages, but why don't we praise our own? So there's a sort of campaigning quality to the messenger there. That's interesting. I think that might be an interesting angle that goes with it. Who else had a horribly long speech? Nature, you had a horribly long speech. I quite liked a lot of Nature's stuff. Again, it was, what it is that opening thing is, it feels like humanity, and this is where we go back to what we did with Mundus et Infants, is that it's like you brought humanity into the world and now you're teaching them. So it's like you've gone to a planetarium and you're looking up at the sky and everything's amazing. It's just wonderful. I just wonder if that's the relationship at that point of just going, this is what the world can be. You can agree or disagree.
Yeah, I really like the nature speech. It's quite hard to make poetry out of science, and I think he does that quite well. I didn't object to the travelogue actually either, and I kind of think, yeah, if you had kind of photos of those places, it's actually probably quite interesting to kind of sort of to see photos of them. It does feel to me, this is my first time with it, it does feel like a sort of collection of slightly disjointed bits and bobs, which is mainly probably because it's unfinished and it's got 8 pages missing in the middle, that it feels like almost like a set of set pieces that don't necessarily carry through into one another. To me, like some of the speeches on their own and some of the shtick on its own holds up quite well. But and I know it's sort of a formula, so you kind of know where it's going to go and expect that, but trying to think of myself as a modern audience that doesn't have that framework kind of going.
Well, I mean, that's the sort of the stage after this will be actually filling in those gaps. And we're actually in a much better place now to do that because we've gone through all the other options and the other variations in other texts. Because you're right, it goes from here is some stuff about stuff, and then we go to the morality play element. Mm. And it's a fairly conventional morality play in that, you know, is humanity sins and goes to a tavern and is corrupted and doesn't get interested in learning. And this is where we get to the wit and science connection there. Because it's very like wit and science, which comes later on in that. And we've even got ignorance. And it's, you know, what okay, in this humanity's sort of, there's been a fight and he's hiding behind things. But it's like when the similar figure falls asleep in wit and science and ignorance comes on and they make him a bit stupider and things. So there is a parallel there. Sorry, Liza, I'm talking a lot.
I know you are talking. It is good things. But in this play, I think unlike the wit and science plays, there actually is some back and forth and humanity does get sick of sensual appetite and actually wants to go back and learn science. Mm. So that I think... There is a realization that sensual appetite is very limited and limiting, and that science is vast and cosmic and unlimited. I mean, it does seem like humanity rejects sensual appetite at one point.
Yeah, we do get morality plays where, you know, they sin, they're drawn back. That, you know, it's this constant tussle. Ignorance and sensual appetite have to up their game. So they've got to bring in dancers. They've got to do a production number. Whereas before it's just, oh, have some beer. Here is a lady. Eat some food. You're paying for it. But no, now we have the can-can dancers come on and we have a full production number. The cats agree.
And the cat.
Yeah. But then we've got Studious Desire. I like Studious Desire. I think there's something to be mined out of Studious Desire as well. There's an eagerness to what's, you know, because it is that desire to learn. Can it be in? Because we had this again with Munda Sent Infants when we did the second look. And the second take of it was actually finding those relationships between characters that on the page might be a bit boring. But, you know, actually when you give them a through line that they actually... they start coming alive. I don't know if people have thoughts on that in the room. Rachel, do you have any thoughts?
I think if there's any boy actors in this interlude, that Studious Desire could possibly be a younger member of the company. And it's kind of like him and experience being together is kind of school learning and practical learning experience. Just experiencing life and learning from experience versus a book. So I don't know. Yeah, I think there's probably like a relationship of like, at least on Studious Desire's part, towards looking at experience as like a teacher.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, is experience the former member of the school who's come back a few years later, as opposed to being, say, a formal tutor? I don't know, Lindsay, did it feel like a teacher, or did it feel like someone who's just seen the world?
It felt to me like someone who's seen the world and studied maps and history, such as it was. I think it was experience rather than... an educator solely, it felt to me.
So that's probably the challenge is that experience is someone who's, maybe there's an enthusiasm to, look, this is the stuff, and then there's some more stuff. And if you do all the stuff, I don't know if that's in the text or whether we need to give it a kick up its arse to make that work. And maybe that's a way of angling it to see if we can get more out of that. Because I don't think there's much to say about the Taverner. The Taverner was very... I thought Alex just leapt at it and wrestled it to the ground and got on with it.
Yes, I don't think it's at home to Mr. and Mrs. Subtlety, is it really? It's kind of.
I love the taverner, though. I mean, sensual appetite is putting on the big, you know, tits and teeth, sell everything to the 100%, and the taverner just is having none of that bullshit.
Yes, where is the money? You can have all the things.
It can't be any rose water. It has to be organic.
Oh, yeah, it's organic, mate. It's organic. And then ignorance, which is a shame because we don't have ignorance's introduction. Or we only have a bit, you know, there might be a bit before it. I mean, we have him saying his name is in ignorance and sort of introducing himself, but it's sort of mid-speech, and we're not quite sure, you know, how we with that actually gets imparted.
I don't need an introduction.
No. I mean, in a sense, all you need to do is come in and experience is there going, look at all this globe, it's wonderful, and you can go here and you just come on and just, I don't want any of that.
Well, I think it would be more like, you know, what cats do when they sort of just push random things off the table and it's like, I'm not interested in this.
I am not interested in this. I'm not interested in that. I don't know what that is, so I'm not, can I eat it? No. Other thoughts before we stop and have a little chat about what we're actually going to do? Rachel.
This is something I wonder. I think there was another play where we had characters talking about the Quran and they were saying Al-Quran, you know, Al being the in Arabic, and putting it together, not knowing it's separate words just because of perhaps a misconception that existed at the time, you know, just in the same way that we say the Bible. But in the part where experience talk is talking about the Khan, and they're talking about the seas so much, and the geography seems, I don't know, maybe this is just from, because this text is still new to me, but the geography when it gets to the Khan starts to become a little weird. I think they used to call those grass seas, so there might be some ambiguity as to how, or maybe this is my mistake and he's further east than I remember, because I think there was a point where they invaded Japan, but that the whole region that they lived in was also called the grass seas or something. Or that was something that they called them.
I don't know in detail, but I believe that, you know, any errors that may be in this are accurate errors in the sense of knowledge that's reasonably, you know, I believe he's done a certain amount of reading of materials that are available. But obviously, this is a time when there isn't that much printing, so there isn't necessarily that many things. But there are maps appearing, and. So in that sense, it's probably accurate inaccuracies, if there are any inaccuracies, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I just thought it was like that it could possibly be an interesting misconception that people held at the time. That, you know, just being able to have all this, you know, technology now is easier for us to know.
Any other thoughts before we close the session and say farewell? So we will return. We will come back. We will be stronger and more powerful next time. And we will have made some decisions and we'll play around with this in different kinds of ways. We may even have some imagery, though whether we'll have the full amount of imagery that this play really demands, maybe not, but we'll certainly have hopefully something that will get us a little closer to what this play does. All that remains to thank all these wonderful performers today for their time. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.